I started the session by talking a little bit about intention and commitment. Now, in one sense, no need to say that. Intending to be who we are is already something extra. That's as if we're putting something on top of what's already so, then it's already extra. Nevertheless, because of how often, how many ways we find of missing who we are, not being as we are, it's important to intend and commit in order to enable us to be who we are, or to us, to say it differently, in order to enable us not to live out of reactive habits and ways that we have to miss our own life. So what is this our own life that we can miss? And what is it we do that causes us to miss our own life? In Zen tradition, one of the ways we have of speaking of this, of encouraging and supporting our practice around this, is talking about, or I shouldn't say talking about, clarifying the three treasures. Three treasures, sometimes called the three jewels, different names. Again, this is a way of speaking about, even more a way of practicing with and clarifying our own life. So, nevertheless, in Zen tradition, we talk about the three treasures. We talk about Buddha, Dharma, Sangha as the three treasures. And to make it even more clear, in our particular tradition, we talk about three aspects of the three treasures. First is called One Body, Three Treasures. Second is called Realized, Three Treasures. Third is called Maintained, Three Treasures. And for those who do formal koan practice, this is treated as koans at the very end of formal study, formal practice, because in a way it's the very first thing our practice is, and yet it's ongoing clarifying this. So I thought I would speak a little about this. Now, of course, speaking about this is different than clarifying it in Dzogchen, clarifying it in our own life practice. We shouldn't mix up explanations, but explanations are still important as supports, as help to enable us to clarify and realize this for ourselves. Just like it's important to clarify what to do when you're sitting, and yet talking about it, clarifying it, isn't the same as sitting, as you all very well know. As you all very well know. I like to use the example of recipes and menus and cooking and eating. You could read many recipes and glance at many menus and you'll still be hungry. Recipes and menus are important, and if you're cooking, the recipe is important, and yet if you don't get in there and do it, well, your mouth might salivate when you read the menu or read the recipe, but you'll still be hungry. So today I want to say a little bit about what's called the One Body, Three Treasures. Again, as I said, this is speaking about what? Speaking about the truth of what our life is. We could use fancy words like perfect universal enlightenment, such that's Dogen says, perfect enlightenment is the Buddha treasure, Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, which is what we say in the Heart Sutra, complete perfect enlightenment. But what does that mean? See, that means exactly our life. We could say that's the way, we could say that's Dharma, we could say it's exactly our life, which is what each one of us is from the beginning. We've been in class reading and studying the text by Wang Bo, and this is how he starts. Mind is Buddha. Mind is sentient beings. Buddha isn't any more, sentient beings isn't any less, if I say it differently. So this, when we use the word Buddha, is what we encounter from morning to night. What we encounter outside, inside, it's our fundamental life. If I say it differently, you could use words like fundamental true nature, fundamental emptiness. We use that kind of word. And yet, as soon as we entangle and hold on to self-centeredness, we miss who we are. Why do we miss it? Because self-centeredness, in a sense, causes us to choose what is me and what is not me, what I like, what I don't like, and not only choose, but become attached, cling, thirst after some, want to get rid of others. See, we say this every time in the, when we recite the practice principles, caught in self-centered dream, holding to self-centered thoughts. See, that's the only reason we miss this Buddha treasure. Don't have to use the word Buddha treasure, even just say this treasure that is our life, this Dharma that is fundamentally from the beginning who we are. All the various ways in the Buddhist and Zen tradition of talking about this are ways of clarifying this. We use words like four wisdoms or five wisdoms or Dharmakaya or Sambhogakaya or Nirmanakaya or other words, liberation, Prajna wisdom. All of that is just this fundamental one body treasure that is who we are. Or we could say, everything that we encounter from morning to night is nothing but manifestations of this perfect way. But we don't believe it. So right there, if we want to say our intention of practice there is to see how we don't believe it. Not in a sense of trying to figure it out, but simply notice that and make the practice effort, whether it's your commitment to, let's say in terms of formal zazen, to be zazen, be present, be experiencing, despite the fact that you've got all these great thoughts that you want to pursue, all these feelings that you want to do something about because they shouldn't be here, or all sorts of other things that come and go. That's what attachment or clinging or thirsting is, and that's what intention or commitment is, the practice support about. We all know this. If you have a formal relationship, whether we call it a marriage, a partnership, and so forth, we make certain commitments despite the fact that all sorts of desires, interests might arise. We maintain a certain basic commitment to the relationship, and therefore do not follow after every desire and interest that appears. Or else we don't, and then we have the consequences of how that distorts and destroys relationships. We have the consequence, and we all know it, or else we wouldn't be sitting, that following after our attachments and thoughts and feelings often results in suffering and harm and stress. Because we distort and become entangled in distorted views and functioning in the midst of this perfect way that is our life from beginning to end. Our life, so-called inside and so-called outside. Of course, so-called inside and outside are just that. So-called inside and outside. We use words like enlightenment or awakening or liberation, but see, we have to clarify that though it seems we lack something, we don't lack from the beginning, and yet it has to become clear for us. See, if it's not so for us, that's where our intention and commitment come forth, are called for. because otherwise we miss for ourselves our own life. See, despite the fact that we can't miss it, we can drink and not taste what we're drinking, not even know that we're lifting up and putting down, because those are just the functioning of this perfect way that we are, this, if I use the word again, fundamental true nature, fundamental emptiness, fundamental wisdom. Prajna means wisdom, the wisdom that functions as our life. And another way to look at this, another, let's say, facet of this, is what we called Dharma. Dharma is the functioning of this life that we are. Sometimes we talk about it in another way. We talk about it as ongoing change. It's ongoing change that doesn't change, in the sense that it's cause and effect manifesting as our life. See? And yet, it doesn't seem to be our life when we're function as self versus other, when we function as I like versus I don't like, because then the ongoing change that is this present moment becomes filtered through our unwillingness to be present. That's why Zazen is being just this moment. See, in a very fundamental way, the intention to be just this moment allows us to be just this moment, because we've always been so. We've always been the functioning of this cause and effect moment right now. We've always been that, despite the fact that we refuse to be it. And then in our refusing to be it, we miss what we are. We miss this, if I use the word, purity. And I use that word because Dogen, when he talks about the Dharma treasure, he says, purity and undefilement is called the Dharma treasure. By that he means purity and undefilement is the nature of this reality that we are. The teaching of this reality that is just cause and effect manifesting. And cause and effect manifests what? This perfect way that we are. This, if we use the word, mysterious because it's not subject. No, let me say it differently. It's not encompassed. It can't be encompassed by the ways that we want to analyze and figure it all out. There are many ways and many things we can analyze and figure out. Again, this liquid in this cup can be analyzed and figured out in all sorts of ways, but that doesn't encompass drinking, tasting, being satiated by it. See? We often have the phrase that's translated into English. It goes, I take refuge in Buddha, or I take refuge in Sangha, or I go to Buddha for refuge, or for guidance is another way sometimes we say. Refuge means I commit myself not to something else, but to what I am. That's why another way we translate is being one with Buddha. Being one with what we are, which means being one with being one, because we are that. And yet, we use the form of doing that, of making commitments, to enable us to go beyond what gets in the way of being who we are. See, what gets in the way of being who we are. See, and another way of talking about that is we talk about that as the Sangha treasure. The Sangha means the harmony of Buddha and Dharma, or the harmony of who we are and the nature of what this is, this ongoing teaching, if we say it that way, or law. Dharma is also used to be law, in other words, a law of cause and effect. Law in the sense of, for instance, when we talk about science in ordinary terms, you talk about the law of gravity. There is no judge who's going to come to enforce gravity. There's no attorney general who's going to come and prosecute you if you try to break the law of gravity. And yet the law of gravity, I don't want to argue science, there's probably exceptions in science, etc. But it's in that sense that it's the functioning of the way things are. Now, we sometimes think something's a law, and then as we discover further or look further, we discover, well, it's not quite so. So I don't want to get stuck in comparing, in using the comparison with gravity as a distraction, because cause and effect is, in a sense, what is enabled because we, from the beginning, are this perfect way. Meaning, we are not any fixed self-nature, not self-centered, and because we are this ongoing change emptiness, that is who we are. Empty means that we are able to manifest according to what cause and effect is right now. See, because we are empty, we can be this moment. Imagine if you were fixed. If you were fixed. Not empty. Therefore, you are the way it is this moment. But that means you can't hear anything other than the way you hear this moment. You can't feel the wind, because there can't be any change in temperature. There can't be thoughts arising and passing, because there's only this moment that the way you are. It's because you are empty of any fixed, permanent self nature that we are the functioning that we are. It's because there is this ongoing cause and effect on all sorts of levels that the fundamental nature that we are is empty. If there was no ongoing cause and effect, there wouldn't be this empty nature that we are. But this is somewhat theoretical, and yet I think it's important to bring up, because it helps us clarify both our capacity to go beyond our usual reactive habits, and the fact that from the beginning there's no place beyond to go. If I say it another way, it's just ceasing to believe, ceasing to be at the effect of solidifying reactive habits, emotions, and thoughts. Clinging to them and attaching them, that's called solidifying. It's not that the arising of them is the problem. It's clinging, attaching, thirsting, all those words that I can use and that are different forms of what we do to cause us to miss who we are. See? Then we miss who we are. And when we miss who we are, what happens? We stress. We suffer. Because despite the fact that from the beginning we are this perfect wisdom, or if I use it that way, perfect functioning, or this mysterious universe that from morning to night, without any effort on our part, appears in its manifest and manifold forms, we get into trouble and we suffer. Okay, I don't want to say too much more, because I think this is, I've said things some of you might find not quite so easy to grasp, and that's fine. The reason I say it is in the hope that something that I say will be helpful for us in sitting these days together, in getting the most, if I could say it that way, out of sitting, being able to clarify and do what's skillful and appropriate to support us in our intention to be who we are, that will enable us to taste and function as we are. So I will stop here, and we can talk a little bit about this in terms of our practice. I've talked a lot, I'm sorry. So I'll stop now. But I will promise you, whether it's a promise or a threat, you can take it that we will, whichever way you wish, I will, in the next few days, clarify this a little more from different directions. And hopefully it'll... Yes.
So this morning I was mowing by the curb.
Yes.
And so the grass was high there, and I needed to make sure that the lawnmower doesn't go off the curb because it'll ruin the blade.
Yes.
And I noticed that I'm looking at it very clearly and walking along, and then suddenly things come up.
Uh-huh.
And...
Wait. When you say come up, be more precise. Because it doesn't mean more grass comes up.
No. Elihu will be pissed if I ding his blade.
That came up how?
Yeah, it came up. I'm like, oh, because you're out there, I'm mowing, and I think if I go over this curb, I'm going to, you know, I know what happens. And then now I'm suddenly not seeing what's right in front of me.
And where did that come from?
I don't know.
Good. I don't know. That's important, because all sorts of thoughts and feelings occur. And we don't have to know where they come from, but what we do, and that's the intention part, what's important is to notice when they're there and when all of a sudden, as you said, we start reacting to them. But go ahead, continue.
Yeah, and then you know, I go a little bit farther and I think, wow, I'm doing a good job. And pretty soon I'm not watching what I'm doing. And the wheel, you know, I come out of that little, whatever that is, and the wheel's now crept closer to the edge of the curb, and I have to adjust it again, and then I go, whew, Jesus. And then I'm again back off of just looking, when you say seeing clearly, I'm really not seeing what's right in front of me.
And yet you're also, you used an important word, you said you adjusted. See, if you were just in the reacting, you wouldn't adjust. Our ability to adjust according to the circumstance of this moment, to the extent that we see, to the extent that we're not caught up, is the functioning of this that we are, this wisdom that we are. Now, if we could adjust according to, I'm not going to let him make me do anything, that's another kind of adjustment, but that's an adjustment that leads to more, if I use the word, contraction and upset and stress. Or it could lead to even worse.
Yeah, and just not seeing what, literally not seeing what's in front of you.
Yes.
Because you're into some story and there's some pictures going through your head and ideas and, oh man, what if, and I know what he'll say and da-da-da-da-da. Not that it's ever happened that way, but... And then you just don't, literally, your focus is not on what's right in front of you.
And not in front of you, and not so-called inside you, which aren't two different things. There isn't an inside and outside, except we can talk about in those terms. And that might be a useful thing sometimes to talk about, but not to get caught in. Inside and outside are more fictions, but they're fine to use. Fictions are fine to use. We use them all the time, from morning to night. When we drive down the road, that's a fiction that we use. And yet it's a skillful fiction, so we don't have accidents, and we don't have people get angry at us, and we don't have, etc. But, you know, red lights, green lights, speed limits, those are all fictions that we create. And they're skillful and useful, and there's consequences for those. In fact, our whole life is wrapped up with fictions that are fine to use, but from the beginning, Buddhas and sentient beings are one mind, to quote Wangpo. Or, we could say it another way, from the beginning, there's only the perfect way that we encounter. there's only Buddhas that we encounter, if we want to use that word, or Bodhisattvas that we encounter.
Talk to me about my experience driving on the left-hand side of the road in the countryside of England, because I was...
I don't know anything
well,
about
I mean,
your
I'm
experience.
I'm going to say something, and then you help me. I found that when I was more thinking about what I was doing, then I was more uptight and more apt to get on the curve.
Yeah, yeah right.
Yeah.
But when I was more one with the car and the road, and not thinking, it just sort of
And at the same time, we need to start out with reminders and intentions not to drive the quote American way, but to drive the British way when you're in Britain or in someplace else where they drive in that way. So it's a combination of being a beginner in driving and yet also not being a beginner, because we have all these habits and skills. So it's allowing the skills to function and yet being present in the functioning of those skills, so that we don't go into the habits of going in the American way, or in the way that isn't the way it is now. And so there is thinking that's important, and yet if you operate just out of that, there tends to be, in that sense, more tension and problems that occur. You know, thinking is a wonderful tool. Likes and dislikes, preferences are important. But it's when we become attached and cling to them that we have difficulties. Habits are what makes much of human functioning possible. And yet, being caught in habits, in reactive habits, creates all sorts of difficulties. Because the reactive habits arise out of inaccurate perceptions of what's so at the moment. And we act out of those habits. But this is just theoretical, and what's important is in being present, I could say, in being present in an open and spacious manner, if I use that kind of expression, then the reactiveness need not be acted out on, because there's space for reaction to arise and to pass, which it does, without us clinging to it and therefore thinking. We don't know what's going to arise right now. Even if we decided on what we're going to think about right now and just stay with that, it doesn't work for very long. So in the midst of this universe that's, if I say it, cause and effect universe, that's both inside and outside, being open and having the space for all sorts of arising and passing without holding on to that reactive habit is what we do in the specifics of this moment, this moment. And that's why intention or commitment to our life, to our practice, to who we are. That's why we say things like, I take refuge in, or I commit to. Commit to what? To who and what we are. And to being that, in manifesting that. I mean, the simple form of sesshin, whatever decision we make, whether it's in terms of one sitting period, committing, I'm going to sit here, even if I, after 5 minutes, I feel like moving my leg, you know, I feel like thinking about, we say no. When we notice that, we then, in a sense, do what's skillful to not hold on to that and be this experiencing, breathing right here, listening right here. So, it's the intention to sit one period, the intention to sit one day, the intention to sit whatever we commitments we make. And it's that way in our daily life. And it's that way in formal sitting. But let me stop. What you bring up, rather than... Yeah?
Okay. Isn't the other side, if that's the right word, of commitment also ability? In other words, in the context of sesshin, especially by day three, it seems like the ability to just, you know, seems to deepen. But when I'm back at the condo in Oak Park, Illinois, it ain't sesshin. And while the commitment, I could say, is there, I'm not going to say something is lacking. I'm going to say that there, that for myself, that there's a range, is that the word to use, of ability that I have to be cognizant of in one way or another. I guess to the degree to which I don't lose my temper with myself, because my mind keeps wandering everywhere. Why am I fantasizing about that? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I'm going almost 20 years of practice. You know, you think the ability would be deeper and stronger. Okay. So that's a statement I want to react to.
There's ability, there's another, I would use the word capacity, but there's also supports. See, in one sense, I didn't, practicing with others and with the structure is a support to enable us to be who we are, to be present, if I use that kind of word. So there's all sorts of structures and supports that are needed according to circumstances and conditions. And we know that very well. If it gets colder, we close windows and we put on different clothes, just because it's different. When it's hot, we open windows. That's creating structures and supports according to what's occurring. So ability or capacity is also the ability to see what's needed and what will support and enable us to do. And if we have no clothes and we can't close the windows, we're homeless and out on the street, then we huddle in the corners where we are as to the best of our ability. But where we can, we create structures and supports that enable us. So what you need in sesshin, in one sense, each day of sitting enables, just in a very sense of cause and effect, enables a deepening of the next day of sitting. It also means that all sorts of other things can arise internally, externally. But different circumstances require different supports, and being able to see clearly what's needed when you're in Chicago in your condo is different than what's needed when you're in the Zendo with other people practicing together. That's why it's called a Sangha treasure, sit practicing with others. It's not the same, and yet it is the same, and yet you are not different in one than another, and yet our what we get caught up in and what we need to do to nurture and support each other or support ourselves varies. So, thank you.
When we were studying the sutras this morning, I immediately get the idea, well, we've recited this so many times, I just know this from memory, I can just keep going and just do it completely on autopilot. And then I immediately realize, oh, I'm actually chanting faster than everyone else. Just listen to the drum. So, I mean, in one sense, if by habit you can just listen to the drum, then you could just chant the entire thing on autopilot.
I would say it a little differently. See, autopilot is usually taken, you're on autopilot and then you're elsewhere. The autopilot takes over certain functioning and you're doing other things, reading, thinking about. It's just the opposite. When we include the makubya, what you call the drum, we're expanding ourselves so that the drum, is part of us and we are part of it. So sometimes we say, chant with your ears. In other words, chant with your ears rather than with your mouth and with your self ideas, but in a sense expand yourself so that you and everyone else are chanting together. You and the are one. Then, in a sense, it's not autopilot, it's being all the more present. Yeah, we can be tricky. We can try all sorts of habits of that are going to be shortcuts, and sometimes they're useful and sometimes they're not so skillful because they lead us in directions, as you say, that go off. Rose, did you?
No, I second.
Oh.
I want to go back for a moment to what Steve said.
Okay.
Because it resonated with me. And the reason it did, I think, is because obviously the underlying theme of what he was saying was, what's Genmo going to think of me if I mess up his lawnmower? Or what will he think of me if I do a really good job? It's the underlying theme was, what about me? It wasn't about, and I'm sorry if I'm wrong, this is something I run into all the time. You know, what about me? You know, I'm tired of talking about me. Why don't you talk about me? And that's what always gets in the way of being present, is what about me? How am I doing? How am I feeling? What am I thinking? How do I look to them? There's this concept in psychology that I get off of real quick. I know how much you love that stuff, Ken.
I love
it. No, you don't. It's because it's theory. But there's a thing called theory of mind, and it says that our concept of ourself is derived by what we assume, believe, expect, or think other people, how other people see us. That's how we see ourselves, is how we think they see us. And so our self is really an echo of what we perceive other people reacting to us. And it's always, for me, it seems to be a fairly distorted echo in that I'm not paying enough attention to the people around me to really see, to really be with them, not to see that perception that they're having. Because it's, I want it to be about me.
Mm. So
and it's a very subtle and it's a very, it's a difficult thing to catch because it's so natural and integrated and normal to be about me.
So it seems that what we are hearing others is really what we are hearing. How does that
what about me?
Reflect me, take care of me?
Yes.
And it's because we don't know who we are, or because we are caught up in self as being somewhere inside this, if I use that expression I like, skin bag, this bag of skin and bones. We think this is somehow me, and that everything else I encounter is somehow not me. That, as I sometimes use, not self and not other than self, is a useful way to see an alternative. Because what you're talking about is, it's me, and when I see you, it's me in terms of how you help me.
Yeah, yes. How you see me.
Or help me, see me. What are you going to tell me? What are you going to tell me about me?
Exactly.
And what are you going to do for me? Or is what you're doing what I like? Good. Is what you're doing what I don't like? Well, you've got to fix it so that... And it's not a criticism. It's not... This is simply a habit that we react out of when we don't see what we're doing, or when we don't see the consequences of it. That sometimes seems natural, and it seems natural if we don't know who we are. And I don't mean know in just a conceptual sense. If we're not living the life of who we are, we tend to live a life out of who we're not, which is the story of self-centeredness. See, that's why when we recite the practice principles, caught in self-centered dream is a reminder. It's not a statement of that you have to be that way or that's inevitable, but that will arise until, except when it doesn't. When it does, and then it's our reminder. And we can notice it emotionally, we can notice it physically, those are all different facets of what we do that takes us away, if I say it in such a way, or distorts for us this ongoing functioning of this awakened life that we are. The ongoing functioning of it is this cause and effect manifesting right as our life and as everything we encounter. And yet we can distort it and get in trouble because of that distortion. As Nate was saying, we can be, go on autopilot, and then we're missed. We missed what's happening. And then we can get upset about, hey you guys, you're chanting wrong. Come on, follow me, I got it right. Yeah. And see, and we can do that. And then you know what happens. People get into fights with all sorts of others about whether they're doing it the right way. No? You're shaking your head back there.
No, it's just that we find all kinds of reasons to
yes.
fight with one another.
Yes, also, and even fight with ourselves. And we suffer because of that. So, but we have to know that from the beginning we are nothing but this perfect way. We encounter only this perfect life, which is arising, passing of, in the midst of being born, dying, not born, not destroyed. And this is our opportunity of practice right here. This breath. This breath. This moment. And one of the supports is our intention and commitment to do it.
So the difference space between believing that, I mean, I believe what you're saying, and being able to experience it, is, I suppose, what ongoing practice is about.
Yes, and it's also what I'm going to talk about tomorrow, called the Realized Three Treasures. So, you're perfect. Perfect leading. Well, I'll try to talk a little about it. Of course, if I talk about it, it's already... Anyway, it's already somewhat extra, somewhat off. So, but this is all encouragement of your intention practice, and that's what's most significant. So what you take here is you have to hold on to nothing but just take whatever is useful and resonates and supports you in your practice. Thank you.
Copyright 2013, Eliu Genmyo Smith.